Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
So a happy new year, Mark. Happy 2021.
Happy 2021 indeed. 2020 is behind us. It started to follow us a little bit into January, but now here we are. We're less than a week away from a new president.
We have indeed, Mark, and I think that it is a good point as well to have an outlook on what to expect for 2021.
That's right. And to help us with that, we are bringing not one, but two special guests on today. We have Steve Sternisha, the Chief Executive Officer of Cleveland International Fund, where he brings his decades of executive level experience in both public and private sectors to their strategic vision for EB5. And we also have joining us Leon Rodriguez. Leon is the co-managing partner of Cypress Shaw's Washington, D.C. office. In his 25-plus year career, he has served as a prosecutor, a law firm partner, and as the director of USCIS. Steve, Leon, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure being here.
Thanks for inviting us.
So, gentlemen, a new administration means a change of leadership at USCIS. We are getting, as we all know that Alejandro Mayorkas, he's Cuban-born, 61 years old, and the best thing is that he's no stranger to EB5. So, Leon, do you expect that Mr. Mayorkas will be swiftly rolling back Trump administration immigration policies?
The answer to that question is yes, but not everywhere. Based on what are going to be the most important priorities for the incoming Biden administration, not just the Mayorkas administration, they're going to be able to focus on the southwestern border, on asylum issues, on DACA. That's really going to be the first round, the travel bans from back in 2017.
Oh, definitely travel bans. But the travel bans will affect us also, because I suppose, Steve, you get it all the time too. So many investors are asking, even before they invest, you know, if there's a travel ban, why should I invest?
Exactly. And I agree with Leon's point. I think change will be coming and it will be generally good, but they have to staff up. They have to make their priorities. You can't do everything all at once. Remember, we still have very closely divided government. So I think they're going to be careful if they want to be successful to do things, you know, very logically. The end result's going to be good, but I think we're going to have to be patient to some degree. Maybe one of the most important things is the staffing up and who takes some of those positions as it relates to EB5 and whether that can provide some near-term relief on things like processing time, et cetera.
Yeah. And Steve, that's a great point, because one of the biggest issues from an EB5 perspective is what has become USCIS's growing inefficiency. Not that it was perfect when I was director or even when I was director.
I was about to say that.
And I think either one of us would happily own up to that. Ali made a great effort in trying to institute the IPO and professionalize the processing of EB5. But the fact is, things are now through the roof. That's the kind of thing that Ali really believes in trying to improve.
And when you say Ali, I'm sure that just for our listeners, you're talking about Mr. Mayorkas, Alejandro Mayorkas, because you were there at the same time that Mr. Mayorkas was there, right?
Yeah, no, the reality is Mr. Mayorkas and I have been good friends, truly good friends for about 12 years and have known each other for about 20. So yeah, unfortunately, I do sometimes revert to his diminutive name.
But what we certainly see from his appointment is that he's no stranger to EB5. He understands EB5. And in the last couple of years, the kind of RFEs and responses that we were getting from USCIS were like, do you guys even understand what EB5 is about?
Right. I think, again, Leon would probably have a good insider's perspective on this. One of the things as an industry we can push for, which you would think based on his track record he'd be open to, is relatively early to revisit the sort of the stakeholder discussions in whatever form they're most comfortable in doing it. So we can at least put out there these issues and that they can be aware of it. They're not going to change everything all at once, and they're going to be staffing up and those sorts of things, but at least to get on the record what some of these most important things are, I think that'll help him understand maybe where he should put the focus. If I'm him, how can I make the life of EB-5 a little bit better, knowing I can't do everything all at once? What's the most important thing I can do in the near term? And then what things are maybe on the longer term agenda?
Well, Leon, I was going to ask you this in a little short while about the a possibility of EB-5 and this new stimulus. But do you see Mr. Mayorkas coming out on his own volition to see if perhaps EB-5 could be used for troubled businesses?
I don't. And the thing I think we need to keep in mind, DHS is a very, very large organization. We're talking about an organization that does not only have the immigration functions with which we're very familiar, but it's the Coast Guard and the Secret Service and FEMA. And so his attention is going to be spread very thin. Their mission is focused on protection of national security rather than economic development. And so I don't think it's realistic of us to expect him to really be a policy player in the EB-5 space.
I mean, managing expectations now, are we?
Well, managing expectations, but also I think directing the advocacy where it needs to be, which is who's going to take our old job? Who is going to be running USCIS? Where is the White House going to land?
Yeah.
I think all of those things are going to be just as critical as Mr. Mayorkas himself, because at the end of the day, you'll be able to get some of his attention, but it's going to be also spread out with many, many other priorities that he's going to have to be tackling. COVID, another one.
So COVID and furloughs, the hiring freeze, are we going to see an end to that, do you think, Leon?
I think you're going to see a very aggressive review of USCIS's finances, of its operating efficiencies, and there's going to be an understanding that it's been even the threat of furloughs was very damaging to USCIS's morale. More than anything else that happened in the Trump administration, that I know because I've heard it directly from a number of folks still within USCIS, that was extraordinarily damaging. And the way it was handled by leadership was damaging. And so I think they are going to be very much focused on how USCIS operates. Hopefully that will be a benefit to the EB-5 community, that things will just be set on a smoother course going forward. Keep in mind, you're also going to have more professional management. Placing policy issues aside, you had a lot of changes in leadership. You had a lot of people who were not experienced at leading the organization, very distracted with other issues. And a lot of that, I think, was to the detriment of EB-5 and other immigration categories.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Steve, I don't know if you see how many cases you still have out, but in the whole of last year, we only had one project returned with the cases approved, which we had filed back in 2017. There was nothing else. The whole year went by without anything from so many other projects.
Right. Well, if you take the overall theme of what Biden was pitching in terms of how he would be different, obviously he'd be different from Donald Trump in so many ways, but one was, you know, bring down the temperature, no nonsense, professional, people who know what they're doing in government. You can see that at the high level in terms of his appointments. And I think that he's going to let, and particularly knowing that Mr. Mayorkas has already background in the department, that I think they're going to let him go run the department. I would guess. This is speculation, but it just would seem to tie in with the way they're approaching government in general. But I agree that I think it's going to be on managing the department and probably outside of the policy side as it relates to issues of how EB-5 might be brought into an economic development program. I think those discussions and the opportunities there, which are possible, will probably be outside of his very big job of making the department run better, and will be more of a conversation perhaps we can participate in with the economic development side in the White House, and with friends on Capitol Hill. I'm sure if we're lucky enough to perhaps get some changes that as part of whatever the program is, you know, Secretary Mayorkas will take them on and do a good job with them. But I agree, I would get a sense that his job is going to be, you know, running the department in a more efficient and I'll be in less political manner than the previous administration.
I
said it before the election. But it just was so obvious what was going on.
It was. Actually, I'm going to ask either of you if you've heard the rumor. There was a rumor floating around last year that anybody who had filed a petition under the 900 level, under the new regs, they would be dealt with on a different track from the old track of 500,000 and the old TEA. Have you either of you heard this rumor?
I had not heard that rumor. That's very interesting. What sort of track, Mona? That's curious.
That there would be a different adjudicating officer just for that particular sort of scenario, so that it would really be that the newer cases wouldn't sit and be waited for the old cases to be dealt with. I don't know how true it is. And again, this is speculation, but this is one of the rumors that I'd heard.
That's not out of character with some other things that USCIS has done in the EB-5 category and in other categories where there is not always a first-in, first-out approach, but a prioritization of different sort of buckets of cases, if you will. So that wouldn't surprise me if it was true. You know, I do know that people have been observing, I've observed it in my practice, you know, what appears to be clear prioritization of non-backlogged countries in adjudication. So, you know, this would be in kind with that.
It would. And it seems like a common sense. We need some common sense type of improvements as well. Perhaps methods for speeding up the way they look at cases, you know, the repetition that we have to do right now with all the paper, which really does slow everything down. If we can move away from that, I'm really hoping that Mr. Mayorkas really sees these improvements.
Agreed.
Okay, so from there, I think we can move on to what we're expecting on the legislative front this year. Steve, I'm going to start with you because I know as part of an active member of IIUSA's leadership, you have been very busy. And there's a short-term extension there, which would only takes us to June. But what happens after June for the EB-5 program?
We have to get extended. That's the logical answer. Obviously, the difference this year is that date is outside, different than the sort of normal alignment with budget dates, which have been the means by which there was, you know, very high certainty that it was relatively easy just to add EB-5 on to budget matters or omnibus legislation that was happening. And some have been a little bit concerned about this June 30th date because it does suggest that we need a standalone piece of legislation. Now, that's the scary part.
Right.
Things could always go either way. So I'm going to try to put this in balance. But the good thing would be that there was a lot of work done with the potential of getting a long-term 5-year reauthorization of EB-5 with a large number of reform provisions, which have been kicking around for a while. And we got very close to that actually being part of the very controversial, it turned out, omnibus legislation for the balance of the year, along with the stimulus bill. That did not happen, but the indication, and this date was selected really by Senators Grassley and Senator Leahy, whose staff worked with us to get this reform legislation accompanied by the 5-year extension in a very solid form.
Well, just to explain to our readers, so I did want to point out that I think Laura Reif, she wrote a very interesting blog piece when this whole standalone business came about, that stating that Congress has sent a clear message regarding the EB-5 regional center program. The program must be reformed over the next 6 months. And I think that was a direct reference to the Grassley and Leahy bill. We have mentioned it before on our podcasts. And I presume that's what you're referring to?
Yes. We could dive into particular aspects of it, but I think maybe more important for this level of discussion, that had a lot of the components that have been kicked around for a while. And I think a lot of the things that were very concerning in previous drafts of that to regional centers and the industry in general, we worked very hard and got a lot of movement to make this, you know, reform that could work. In many people's minds, it's not ideal. There were some people who were still troubled by some of those aspects, but I think it would be fair to say it's as good a piece of reform legislation as we've been able to get any of the key legislators signed on to. So that's the part that's very encouraging. And their willingness to say, and they wanted to have this added, Senator Grassley and Senator Leahy. So they come into this session supporting that, saying that they're inclined to introduce early on a piece of legislation that represents that and help us get ultimately to reauthorization passing of that legislation prior to June 30th.
Right. Perhaps part of it. And I think it's good for our listeners to understand as well that Senator Grassley is Republican and Senator Leahy is Democratic. So Democrat. So it is a true bipartisan piece of legislation.
Well, and also I would add from two very different points of view with respect to the EB-5 program. I mean, Senator Leahy has been, all but a cheerleader in every respect for the program. Vermont is, it goes without saying, has been very dependent on the EB-5 program. And Senator Grassley has not historically been a fan, but has also sort of been jealous that the rural areas of Iowa aren't getting, the benefit.
Yeah.
And so this is interesting that these two are able to find common ground in this manner.
And I'll add to that, that while their staffs were the primary focal point in getting a draft piece of legislation to where it is now and ready to use that, jumping into this year, there are various House members from the Judiciary Committee who were also very familiar. So I think we're well supported on that side. I think a key thing will be early on, because it did move very fast, is to get the industry to understand that piece of legislation as it stands right now, hopefully get their comfort level on that as a good means moving forward. Again, not perfect, but a good means for a long-term reauthorization. See if we can still make some improvements to it, and then really have a very strong consensus, industry consensus, that will give Senators Leahy and Grassley the ability to push it through, picking up other people along the way. So we have the elements for a strategy that can work, even though the fact that it is sort of on its own standalone date makes it a challenge.
One thing that is, there have been little tiny rumors we've been hearing, and probably strengthened by what we've seen this week with now two Democratic houses of Congress, is that you might have an early push in this new Biden administration for a comprehensive immigration reform bill.
Yeah.
That could really change the game, because that creates a different vehicle than budget authorizations to carry this legislation. That's probably something for folks to be watching, is whether this in some way ends up getting rolled into some much larger immigration-related package.
Well, there is this worry about S-386, H-1044 rearing its head again. We've had a lot of discussions on that too, because that is worrisome.
Yeah. I think the good thing that happened with that, again, all this discussion previous to now hopefully will yield benefits, is that there became good understanding, particularly in the case of like Senator Grassley and Senator Leahy's staff, about how we could do all this. We could reform EB-5 with integrity measures and so forth, as they desire, particularly strongly held by Senator Grassley. But if this other piece of legislation passes, it's all for naught, because it could literally kill. I think there's an understanding of that. I don't think there's been a consensus yet developed about how to deal with that, because obviously you want those who are promoting that for other reasons to be able to do what they want to do without being the roadblock, but obviously not get run over by it at the same time. So we've always known there's ways to fix it and deal with that. I just don't know that the solution, I think it's a wait and see what the solution is.
So Stephen, Leon, I know we're really out there to try and keep Senator Grassley on our side. In your opinion, do you think there's any likelihood of the discussion of TEAs coming back on the table, or do you think that's well and truly settled law now?
I don't. I'll answer quickly. No, I don't.
Yeah, I don't see it happening either. Although they have been challenged in the courts, and I think there is a case which is still kicking around, it doesn't look like it's going to be a successful challenge.
Right. And I think that also holds for investment amount.
But that's not really, I don't think people really objected to the increase in the investment amount. It was more of the TEAs, because that really kicked out the large urban developers.
Right. EB-5 investments went essentially from $500,000 to $1.8 million.
In certain markets.
Well, and they're far less, those companies and individuals and so forth, they're far less active in the discussion right now. I'll just leave it at that. because of those changes that came about. And it's also why they were behind some of the legal challenges to that. And, those are problematic for those type of regional centers. to really utilize EB5 in a way that works for the kind of projects they do.
Leon, let me ask you a question. Moving into 2021, and perhaps because we are now 10 months into the pandemic, there have been rumors and murmurings that the demise of the big players is now inevitable. Speculation could be driven by the realization that the old TA definitions and designations are gone for good and won't be coming back. What's your opinion on that, Leon?
Yeah, and one of the things that I've started to really think about is the changed credit environment and how that's affecting big players and small players, depending on who they are. I mean, you know, certainly hearing about developers who start down the road with EB5, but then realize they can get the capital they need other ways, and they're just less dependent on it. And so I'm wondering if that's playing a role.
Well, I would argue against that because we have clients who have hospitality and are complaining that they're not getting funding. Steve?
Well, and that's obviously a function of, you know, where things are with that industry right now as a result of COVID. And, you know, they have a hard time getting capital for new projects and with good reason, you know. Those would be challenging projects regardless, even for EB5 to raise money around right now. So I'm not sure in terms of new projects, EB5 is going to be the answer there right now. I also think to the extent that in previous times, EB5 was used a lot for those. Yes, the TEA change affects that, but the fact that there really isn't any China market right now, because that was the market that you could raise a large volume.
Yeah.
Larger projects. And you have, if you have to go to multiple countries to do that, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, it's really hard to do, and that's not going to be the way you're going to get things done. So I think there's a lot of factors that go into why hospitality is having a difficulty right now, and I don't know that EB5 can kind of save that. I do think that you know, there's a aspect of that particularly affects the hospitality industry where EB5 could be an interesting source. And this goes back to the idea of, you know, potential changes. This could be a potential policy change as opposed to requiring legislation. And that is to work on the definition of distressed business use by EB5. And obviously, hospitality is very distressed now. So it could be, again, not for new hotel construction, but could be a source in the hospitality industry. But it needs, without getting into, again, the weeds of that, it would be helped by some changes in policy for EB5 to be an effective source for hotels that are in distress.
You know, this is something I had discussed at length with Bob Hans. So sad to hear that he's no longer with us. He was on a podcast, Mark, do you remember? Just a few weeks ago with us.
I do, and I'm saddened to learn about his passing. Yeah, Bob Hans was on episode 124. He talked about some of the best things to happen to him were over his loudest protests. It's unfortunate he's no longer with us.
I'm sure a lot of folks listening to this podcast know or have interacted or had some contact with Bob. It was really a shock to hear that he passed. You know, I've got to know him through my association with IAUSA. I followed him as treasurer. He helped teach me relative to the mechanics of the IAUSA organization. So I owe him a lot there. And he's such an interesting guy. He had a fascinating history, a lot of the things that he was involved in. So it's really sad not to not be able to talk to him again. And he was very, very committed to the EB5 industry and to its growth.
Yeah, and it was his idea. We talked at length about using and trying to show Congress how we could use EB5 for troubled businesses. But the very first thing which we'd have to do is change the rules.
Right. And Bob was always very creative. He always came up with different ideas. So I sometimes I'd smile because some of the ideas were a little out there. But that's great. That's what you want to do. But this is actually an area, again, there's been a lot of discussion on this and ideas that are pretty fully developed or just some good ideas that could get taken to. This is an area of policy that might be something we could take to the new secretary once he gets a little settled to see if they could do something here, because it does not require legislation. It would only require a change in the rules, as you mentioned, and it could be really the hospitality industry is the industry that would be potentially the most affected, and it would fit really well for EB5 because so many regional centers have done, you know, loans to hotels.
Yeah. Well, we thought also of restaurants, and I don't, Leon.
Likewise. Likewise. Yeah.
So the restaurant industry at the moment, especially in cities like New York, is really struggling because we don't even have outdoor dining in the winter.
Yes. And this is one, again, thinking of strategy, you know, there's going to be a lot of ideas kicking around about how to, on the credit side, not so much from a stimulus standpoint, but to help those industries that have been particularly affected, where traditional lending, just they're never really anxious on restaurants and hotels. And that's where EB-5 might be particularly well positioned to put ourselves forward to say, well, we can help with that because we have familiarity with those industries. We've often lent money for their construction, and we can be helpful in raising money, you know, to help them, you know, refinance or provide capital as they kind of work through this. So it is a niche that actually, I don't know that there's a whole lot of other people raising their hands on. So the banks aren't jumping up and down to do more hotel loans now, or et cetera.
And that's going to be the reality for a couple of years to come. In other words, you know, hopefully where people are going to get their vaccines, things are going to get better. But digging out of the economic impact in those industries that you've mentioned, that's going to take a long time. I mean, it took a long time for those industries to get where they were pre-COVID, and it's going to take them a long time to get back.
Do you see it happening this year? Because this is an overview of 2021.
Well, I mean, I think that you're going to see the beginnings of recovery. I mean, I've always wondered whether you're going to have sort of a post-World War II sort of energy where once we're able to return to some semblance of normalcy, we're just going to have this sort of intense entrepreneurial energy going on. And so that's going to certainly create a hunger to build businesses back and start new ones and all that. But at the same time, you've both convinced me. I think even if credit rates are low, lenders are going to be really nervous about actually handing out the money.
Leon, there was a point that I wanted to ask you. I had forgotten to ask you when we were talking earlier about Mr. Mayorkas. Now that the industry has shrunk so much, I mean, some people say it's shrunk as much as 75%. Do you think that it's going to be a little bit more personal and a little bit more intimate and therefore a little bit more forgiving?
I don't necessarily know. I mean, I think we're talking about the restaurant industry, and I don't think I necessarily...
Not just the restaurant industry, but just generally, because if we're not talking about sort of these big, huge projects anymore, with smaller projects and maybe lesser players.
I don't know. In other words, I think there's going to be a somewhat conservative credit environment that's going to make it somewhat hard for smaller players to, without some sort of backer, to start businesses. So maybe it does, but there's going to need to be some level of the industry that's providing security, whether it's to EB-5 investors or traditional commercial lenders, but there's going to need to be a player that's supporting these projects in some way that removes what otherwise would be the skittishness of backing what's a very, you know, individual entrepreneur or investor. So I think it may develop that way, but there are going to need to be other instrumentalities in the industry.
Yeah, Steve, what do you see about EB-5 marketing this year? Do you see traveling continuing to be an issue?
Yeah, I wish it was different, but I think it's going to stay slow for a while. Again, just because of the issue of travel, just because we don't have the whole visa capacity issue is yet to be solved, it's going to be slow. I mean, we are very busy right now in sort of managing our portfolio. There's plenty of work to do right now in making sure our existing borrowers, because of the current state that we're in, you know, stay current and pay and communicate with our investors about the security of their investments. We're really heavy, and I really think this is going to be our 90% focus is on investor relations and investor communication. We got to take care of those that we've already have, and hopefully we'll have some opportunities to travel and raise funds. But I really think it's no sooner than the second half of this year.
I agree. Do both of you see signs that the market has started to pick up?
The new market for new?
Yes.
I wish I could say it differently, but no. But I'm optimistic that it will, and it can. But right now, no.
Leo?
Yeah, I think we're going to be in kind of a holding pattern for a while.
Yeah, I disagree with both of you. I think that we have seen so many more inquiries, especially since the date of the election.
Inquiries on investor interest or on the project side?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, my practice is usually focused on the back end, either the litigation or, you know, defending Noitz and that sort of thing. So
I didn't even go into that, Leon, because
I have a less rosy perspective just because of where we sit.
Yeah, I didn't even start on litigation because if anybody asked me what they saw as the most prominent item of 2021, I would say litigation.
I think that's true. As we start seeing, I think we are going to see some failures of projects and other things that are going to bring about litigation. I think you're absolutely on the money on that.
Other than possible project failures, which may be a result of the downward spiral that these projects are already on, do you have any positive outlooks, whether domestically or on the global stage for 2021?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think one of the things we need to realize about 2021 is that not just in the U.S., but all over the world, we're going to be in a not only a recovery phase, but a sort of energetic recovery phase. As different countries figure their way out of the pandemic, you're going to see people wanting to move forward in their lives, a part of which will be newly considering EB-5 investments, newly considering projects, re-energizing projects that were dormant here in the United States. I do think the way this is going to unfold promises that something like that happening.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually. I do see that energy. And in fact, I see energy coming in from countries that we didn't really expect to see before, parts of Europe, for example.
I agree. I mean, I think the question there is going to be how we get the market to them, because that's not traditionally where any of us have gone, or we haven't gone there that much. But, I think communications are a lot more, are a lot easier in places like that. Who knows? That could well be the next trend.
Yeah, well, interestingly, on a previous podcast, Rebecca and myself were speaking with a gentleman from the UK who saw the UK as being more of a hub now since Brexit and as a launching pad to the US. That was the first time we'd heard that.
And I'm curious about that. Are those UK-born residents, or are those folks who came from somewhere else in the world? UK was their first stop and it's not turning out to be what they were looking for, and they're looking for another.
I see that because the UK is easier for people to get immigration to, or rather Europe was easier to get immigration to. So I see Europe as being, or London being, as the launching pad to come. For example, there were many people who were able to get visas to the Schengen countries, but they could not necessarily get a visa to the United States.
Interesting. Yep, that sounds very promising.
I think, obviously, what could emerge during this time, I'm doubtful there's going to be any quick relief that will open up the China market. So it means that if you are, dedicated and committed to pursue EB-5, you have projects that you are good EB-5 projects that you want to sell, you're going to have to be looking at these other markets. And there clearly are new dynamics in the world, like what you're talking about in Europe and England specifically, that I don't think anything will be what China was, 14 to 15, but there's a combination and there's a variety of countries out there that could do that. It's always tough for regional centers to spend the time and money, and right now are unable to visit some of these newer markets for them. I mean, we're a mid-sized, smaller regional center, and that's our challenge, spending money to do those things, and also just the practical side. But clearly, this could take a different form. I'm reminded before my time that, China wasn't really the first big EB-5 market. It's, started more in Korea, for that matter. So it's very possible. The world's always changing. So some of these new markets could really be the source of the growth of EB-5 going forward.
Well, I know I can certainly speak for myself that I have a bit of a pandemic fatigue. It's been over 300 days since the pandemic has been declared. We're also at the release of this episode. We're less than a week away from a new president stepping in. So I have high hopes for 2021. And that being said, with my pandemic fatigue, I expect, at least in my household, a surge on the hospitality industry, hotels, restaurants, resorts, vacations, more restaurants, because I miss all that. And it would really be great if EB-5 could play a good part in that recovery. Leon, Steve, thank you so much for coming on today on EB5 Investment Voice.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.